Here we go on a Sunday morning in Las Vegas. I'm Spencer the Wiz, and this is Out of Line. We are here in the RCG Home Loan, powered by Luminate Bank Studio, every Sunday at 8 on Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM, Las Vegas flagship station of the Vegas Golden Knights and sister station of Raiders Nation Radio and ESPN Radio Las Vegas. The We also includes host of Out of Line, Brian Feldman, who will be joining us from Costa Rica, and producer Chris Magnum Chapman, who, aside from producing and being part of several shows at Lotus Broadcasting, Magnum also serves as a locker room reporter for the Vegas Golden Knights radio network. We are also streaming on the LV Sports Network, and you can watch the show on Facebook Live and Twitch. The page is called Out of Line. That's O-U-T-T-A-L-I-N-E. Follow the show on X at Out of Line Fox LV. And since we are live, your calls and questions are welcome. The RCG Home Loan, powered by Luminate Bank Studio line, is 702-876-1340.
And it's time for What's on Tap.
What's on Tap, brought to you by title sponsor RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank. Whether purchasing a new home or refinancing the home you already own, RCG Home Loan, powered by Luminate Bank, is the company to turn to for all of your home financing needs. To get information or to get your questions answered regarding anything mortgage or real estate related, contact the pros at RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank, today at 702-964-5720. On Tap. The Golden Knights season has long since been over, but we will do a little retrospective on them shortly. The Stanley Cup, on the other hand, is just about to begin. We will talk about the Oilers-Dallas Game 6 and see if Pete DeBoer will fall short once again. The NBA Finals has now been set up between the Dallas Mavericks and Boston Celtics. We will get everyone's opinion on that. Caitlin Clark has brought more eyes to the game of the WNBA than anyone before her. You would think she would get the support of her fellow professionals, but that has not been the case so far. At the end of the show, we'll talk about the Raiders QB room and maybe even get into their schedule a bit if we have time. That's What's on Tap. If you are looking to buy a home, refinance the home you currently own, or have any mortgage or real estate related questions, call 702-964-5720. Before we get into it, I will jump over to the host of Out of Line and see how he is doing in Costa Rica. Probably not the worst place to be right now, I'm guessing.
What's up, Spencer? Let's see.
Oh, hey, how's it going?
Good. You can't see me, huh?
No, I got you. Give me one second. I'll fix it.
There we go. Okay.
There we go. All right.
Sitting on my balcony here in Costa Rica, enjoying the hell out of myself, but always ready to talk some sports. Watched the hockey game last night. I'll be here for the NBA Finals, man. All good stuff.
No, I can't wait. Magnum, how you doing?
I'm not doing as good as Brian, apparently.
No kidding. All right, let's jump into Nightcap. I got some good stuff for you guys.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
Yeah, well, I guess the puck doesn't start anymore for the Golden Knights, but I think this is the perfect time for a little retrospective on the team. And it's almost weird to say this now because it doesn't feel like it was that long ago, but it was 2017 when this team started. And for many years after they started, it was all about talking back to the first run. You know, you remember what it was like, you know, living up to those expectations. And I'm curious to get your guys' opinions. Like, do you think that stigma is gone now, that we're completely removed from the first season? Like, this team has its own identity at this point. Are we still defining them by the terms of that? You know, I know they won the Stanley Cup, but like I said, the team's identity was so just tied down to that first magical run. And now that less and less people are on the team, you know, do the Golden Knights, are they just their own regular NHL franchise that we can just talk about normally, like every other franchise in the league at this point?
Well, what I'll say first, and I definitely am interested to hear what Chris says. You know, I would say, Spencer, the run continues, even though as of right now, till they finish, till the moves are made, there's five original Golden Knights. I count Shea Theodore as one. Magnum's probably one of the very few people that know Shea Theodore actually was not one, since he was cut and sent back to Chicago in the AHL at the beginning of the 2017 season. However, he was brought up about 2 weeks later due to an injury. And I know, I think we talked about that. And I asked him when he came back up saying, you know, we kind of all projected you as being one of the guys that would make the team. And he said very clearly to me and very succinctly that I am never going back down. And boy, truer words were never spoken. Shea Theodore has never come close to going back to the AHL. He's established himself as one of the better two-way defensemen in the National Hockey League. Offensive-minded defenseman. You know, been plagued by injuries a little bit throughout his career to this point, but still, when he's at the top of his game, Shea Theodore is one of the best in the game. Although I agree with Chris, I don't know how much longer he will be a Vegas Golden Knight. I think he will command high dollars eventually wherever he goes after this season. And you know, I don't think the Knights will retain him. But either way, Spencer, just to answer your question, going back to it directly, I would say no. I think the run continues. They've only had one season where they did not make the playoffs, and they were so hampered by man-hour injuries that year that you can't blame them. The year against the San Jose Sharks, we know in year two, they should have advanced at least to the second round. They got really screwed by a penalty on Cody Eakin, something I'm sure that poor kid lives with this day, that really shouldn't have been called. It was definitely not the penalty. It shouldn't have been a 5-minute major and allowed them to score three goals in a very short period of time. But again, I'm bantering on the fact that it's not the end of this run, Spencer. I think that this team, even though they continue to retool, this has been a successful professional franchise since the jump, and I don't think that changes now. I think the reason that you don't say it changed, Spencer, is because management. Yes, George McPhee is no longer the general manager, but he still basically oversees everything, and Kelly McCrimmon really has slid into that role tremendously. I think maybe not talked about enough as being one of the best general managers in the National Hockey League. It seems like every move these guys make together, they make great, and you got to give them all kinds of credit for it. So I'm going to say no, it hasn't changed. And this team, yes, they have a different identity to a degree based on player personnel, but the overall ambiance of the team remains the same.
Well, I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. I'll start by saying that no, this team is no longer defined or I mean, look, the success year one was the success year one. Ultimately, it didn't win you a Stanley Cup. It got you close. I think had they not won the cup, we'd probably still look at that team as the bar that's set every year. But they're a champion. They'll forever be a champion. Their names will forever be on that cup. They'll forever be in the Hockey Hall of Fame. Guys who will long be forgotten will always have that moment that they were on the ice for a Stanley Cup championship. The bar is now set to that is what you achieve or you want to achieve every season. Making a run is nice. Making a run as an expansion franchise is even nicer, but it's not anything even comparable to winning a Stanley Cup. And, you know, Spencer, you mentioned something. We have less and less guys on this team that were associated with year one. There's a real possibility that we're going to be down two, maybe three more guys from that team, depending on what happens with Jonathan Marchessault, so William Carrier, and if there's another move made involving another original player. And, I mean, that would leave, I think, William Karlsson as the only guy. I'm trying to think. It's been a while since I've been in the locker room and seen guys, but, you know, William Karlsson, I think, would be, and some people would include Zach Whitecloud, and some people would include Shea Theodore. They were not on the original roster that was introduced to the team the first home game, but they did play for the team in that first year, so I will include them as original misfits, and Whitecloud did play a game that year, so I will include him. He was an original, didn't have a major role, but he was there. He was part of it. So,
yep, true.
You know, I think there's going to come a day where there's not going to be any of those guys left. And I think for some of the people, like the hard thing I think for fans here is a lot of them still have a hard time separating that team from what we see now on the ice. Like you still see people talk about Marc-Andre Fleury as being like someone who may come back. He's not coming back. Like he's gone. That ship has sailed. But there's people who still talk about him like he's part of the team. And it's like, you know, you guys, you have to move on. This team made all the right decisions. They won a Stanley Cup. To me, that's better than what they did year one. Like, it was special year one. And I think because of what happened a couple nights before the opening game of the season, it became a lot more special. But that aside, you play hockey to win the Stanley Cup. And the Golden Knights did that last season, and that is how they will, in my mind, that is how Kelly McCrimmon and George McPhee and Bill Foley will forever be defined. They will be the masterminds behind bringing a major sports title, and it's not a knock to the Aces or whatever minor league team that may have been here and won a championship back in 1994 or 1998. Nobody cares about the whatever Continental Basketball League was here or the games that were being played out at that batting cage over on Sunset and by the airport across the street from Town Square and behind the golf center. Like, nobody cares about that team. Most people don't even know they existed. What matters is those three guys, McPhee, McCrimmon, and Bill Foley, brought a Stanley Cup championship to the Vegas Valley, and 25, 30 years from now, this team may not win another Stanley Cup. I mean, look at the New York Rangers. They've won, they're an original six franchise. They've won one Stanley Cup since before Pearl Harbor. Like, they won in 1940, and they won in 1994. That's it. They were the President's Trophy winning team last night. And they have now gone 30 years, another 30 years, after 54 years without a cup, they've now gone another 30 years. So there's no guarantee that you're ever going to win another Stanley Cup. I mean, the Flyers have been around forever. They had a great run in the 70s and early 80s. They haven't been a champion since. The Islanders won four straight. They haven't been a champion since, what, 84? I mean, they're going on 40 years. So embrace what happened last year. Enjoy it. Live it up, because there's no guarantees you're ever going to see another one. And, you know, this season started out so well, right? They were 11-0-1, and we were all thinking, up, they're going to go back and win another cup. Not so easy. It's a long season. Winning in this league is hard. And as you see, I mean, the President's Trophy winning team, I don't believe there's a curse. It does happen occasionally. They get beat early. But generally, they don't win the Stanley Cup because it's so hard to be the best team in the regular season and in the postseason. This isn't the NBA, where the Warriors, I know they didn't win the title that year, but they made it look easy. And I think they got themselves in trouble, right? If Draymond Green doesn't get ejected and suspended, they probably beat the Cavaliers that year. So, you know, it's not easy to win championships. So I think that's, Chris Wynn. The Islanders haven't won since the Tigers won the World Series.
That's true.
He's throwing
again,
daggers, Brian.
When you talk about that Islanders team, what I'll say, Chris, is you are right. But remember, the last team that won the Islanders team, that was the last of four straight Stanley Cups. That was a dynasty.
Oh yeah, but if you would have told time. If you would have told a 15-year-old or a 19-year-old or a 21-year-old Islanders fan in 1984 that they're not even going to make another Stanley Cup final, if you were 21 when the Islanders won the Stanley Cup in 84, you're only a few years away from cashing Social Security checks, Brian. So, like, if you would have told those fans back in 1984 that they're never going to see another title, I'm guessing a large percentage of them would have told you that you're crazy. Oh, we've
Chris,
got Mike Bossy, and we've got Billy Smith.
You know, listen, I just wanted to interject there. I understand that. But if you would have told me in 1984 when the Tigers won the World Series – that it come 2024, I would still not have a Lions Super Bowl. I would have told you were out of your mind.
Especially when you've seen teams like the Aints and
oh my God! And especially again, what happened this year?
Yeah,
it's so funny, and I'm not going to joke. But somehow the Lions in this great season that they had, this epic season, the best of my lifetime, the best coach they've had in my lifetime, the best GM they've had in my lifetime, somehow with all that, they still found a way to break another dubious record and have the allow the largest comeback in conference championship game history. I mean, I just don't know how they do it. They find a way to find something of futility in even in success in Detroit. But again, my whole point of bringing that up was when you're a Detroit Lions fan, as I've said many times in this show, you don't feel sorry for anybody else. You feel sorry for yourselves. So Islander fan, I would love to say in my life, the Detroit Lions had a dynasty. They haven't had a season, let alone a dynasty. So you know what? I'm sorry it's not since 84. Spencer cries about the Raiders too, and I get it because in his lifetime, he hasn't seen crap. So he doesn't care what the Raiders of the 70s and the 80s does. It doesn't mean a damn thing to him because he wants to see it now. And I get it as a fan, you do want to see it now. But it is kind of disconcerting when you talk about the two New York franchises and the limited success they've had on the rink is really kind of surprising, Chris. And I do agree with you. The Rangers, you're talking about one of the most storied franchises in history. And yet, what do they have to show for it in the last half a century? Barely anything. You know, one Stanley Cup championship. So I do agree with you. But the Knights, and again, just to wrap that part of it up, you know, the Knights, again, I agree with you, Chris, to a degree. It is a different team with a different identity because you have so many different faces. But my point is, up top, Bill Foley, Kelly McCrimmon, George McPhee, they're all intact. They were here. And they helped grow this team. And Spencer, you know, in the show log, you put something that's really interesting, and I'd like to hear Chris's take on it, talking about if they build a statue in front of T-Mobile Arena, what would that statue be right now? And you know, Spencer, Chris, you might remember, Mags, when we first started the Golden Knights in 2017, we were saying, trying to advise people what jersey to buy. And I said, you couldn't go wrong with Marc-Andre Fleury. And, you know, for some reason, because he started so hot, I got myself a Carlson jersey. I'm pretty happy that I can still wear that thing. Here, 7 seasons later, I'm still wearing my Carlson jersey. So that's pretty cool that I bought the right one. But what trophy would be erected? I don't know how you don't have maybe a trophy of the original masterminds and throw Marc-Andre Fleury's head in there. Mm-hmm. I don't know that there's another Golden Knight you can really put on that trophy. People might argue Jonathan Marchessault, the all-time leading scorer. Not the inaugural season, he didn't. I think you got to put Bill Foley, George McPhee, and Marc-Andre Fleury's head on that statue for sure. Maybe Kelly McCrimmon's as well, and I'd probably stop there. Chris, what are your thoughts about that? If they built a statue and put it in front of T-Mobile Arena, what would you expect to be on that statue?
Well, I don't think they put any of those guys on the statue. I think what they would do is they would probably have a statue of the team and surrounding Mark Stone holding up that Stanley Cup. Like they don't have that Hall of Fame player yet. Like, I was in New Jersey and outside.
How do you say Marc-Andre Fleury isn't a Hall of Fame player because and what he did here?
Well, because he wasn't here when they won the Cup, and he hadn't been here for a couple of years. I mean, he's a Hall of Fame goalie, no doubt. But, I mean, when he goes in, he's going to go in as a Penguin, a Golden Knight, a Blackhawk, a Minnesota Wild. You know, like, he's not that yes, he's an iconic player in the history of the franchise, but he's not the iconic player in franchise history. Maybe that'll end up being Jack Eichel. Maybe it'll end up being someone else. I don't know, Brian, but to me, if you're putting a statue outside T-Mobile, it's the team, because this has always been the team. It's not about one individual. It's the team. And I think you have Mark Stone in the middle with the Stanley Cup above his head and that overhead shot. And maybe you have, you know, some just random, you know, random players, no numbers. You just have Mark Stone holding up that cup and just, you know, players are outside. You know, I think the first jersey that's ever retired is going to be Jonathan Marchessault. And yep. I have not come off of that. And I believe that. And I think, you know, I'm a big believer in you don't just retire jerseys to retire jerseys. Like, you have a ring of honor for that. Like, you have a ring of honor. And, like, in baseball, nobody will ever wear the number 42. Mariano Rivera was the last player to ever do it. And, you know, I think in hockey it's 99. I think maybe you should retire 66 as well. But you know, in terms of this franchise, no one should ever wear number 81 ever again.
Yeah, no, Chris, and I agree with you. Chris Flynn typed in that, you know, that he thought Jonathan Marsall would be the first.
And if you have to do that. Oh, I'm sorry, Brian. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No. It's okay. I wasn't hearing it, Spence. If I would have heard you, I wouldn't have. But no, I get it. All I'm saying is, you know, I agree with Chris said Jonathan Marsh will be the statue. I still think, Chris, what you said makes some sense. It's kind of hard. It would be a monstrous statue to get the entire team on there. But I think the cornerstones of this franchise should always be recognized. Bill Foley had a mission. He had a vision. He had a dream. And every single thing the guy said came to fruition. 6 years of Stanley Cup, they did it. But I think, you know, again, most people, Chris, and we're not two of those people, but I just, a lot of people do not talk about how valuable George McPhee is and definitely was to this franchise, especially at the beginning. A man that understands how to build a winning chemistry amongst players. Again, not the mastermind. Herbie Brooks was of the Miracle on Ice of the 1980 Olympic team, but George McPhee was a part of it, and he understood it. He was a friend of Herbie Brooks. He understood his thinking and how to mesh players, and the way they mesh these misfits at the beginning is something that will go down in history. And I don't know that maybe you don't, you know, to not recognize those original Golden Knights by putting up a statue of only the Stanley Cup champions, to me, would be a disservice, because the initial team was so miraculous. All of us know that we saw something very, very special in the 2017-2018 NHL season. It was in all of the years and all of the things that I've got to do, and I get emotional over this, because I have never seen anything so cool or been able to be a part of it, to watch a true expansion team, not a team that came from somewhere else that was displaced, a true expansion team make a run to the Stanley Cup Finals. And it's one thing where you have a format like the NCAA tournament where it's one and done. Something like that can possibly happen where you have somebody just play out of their minds for a little while. But you're talking about a team that won three series in their first season of existence in what is the Stanley Cup playoffs. And Chris, you know that every professional league, when you get the playoffs and postseason, it elevates. The games elevate. There's more speed. There's more intensity. There's more of a sense of urgency. This Golden Knights team in a league that picks up the speed maybe more than any other professional league when it comes to the postseason, these guys fly to begin with. But you get into the postseason, and it is unbelievable. It might be the most exciting sport event, in my opinion, watching the Stanley Cup playoffs because of the speed, the intensity, and the physicality of the postseason. And yet the Golden Knights were able to match that with the best teams in hockey in one of the most miraculous runs I've ever seen. It didn't culminate in a Stanley Cup championship that first year, but it gave us something, all of us. It gave Las Vegas hope, and especially after one of the biggest tragedies in the United States history with the Mandalay Bay shooting of October 1st of 2017, the Golden Knights ignited a city. And to not recognize that initial team by making a trophy and just saying, okay, it's a trophy because they won the Stanley Cup in their sixth year, I think does a disservice to that first team, which to me was the coolest thing I've ever experienced. Again, I know I'm being overly redundant, but it was. And for most of us covering, Chris, I looked at your eyes after they won the Stanley Cup. We both had tears in our eyes, but it wasn't just for that team, Chris. It was for the culmination of what that team had accomplished in the 6 years of their existence, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was a build, and you know, but the thing is that there's ways you honor that first team. Like, I don't think that you go overboard, you know, like maybe you put maybe you put that first team in the ring, you know, maybe that is the very first induction into your Ring of Honor. You go out and you honor guys like Derek England and Lucas Spezza and I'm trying to think, Eric Halla and Cody Eakin, right? Like you have ways you can
James Neal. I mean, James Neal, celebrate. People considered him that first year, Chris.
Yeah, I mean,
the best player on that team.
There's ways you can go out and you can honor that team and you know, celebrate what they did without going too far. Like I mean, you do the inaugural team in your Ring of Honor. Like that's I think that's a foregone conclusion. Like, but like that. I don't think you need to build a statue for any of those guys or you know, build, you know, do anything. Like, you don't make stuff up. I think, you know, like I said, I Jonathan Marchessault should be the first jersey retired. And I think if you're going to ever build a statue outside T-Mobile Arena, it's got to have Mark Stone holding the Stanley Cup above his head and his teammates surrounding him. Like, that to me is the way you do it. That's the right way to do it, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think you're right. The reason I'll agree with that is because, again, no offense to the Aces, as you said, but the first major professional sports championship in the city of Las Vegas, one of the most iconic cities in the universe. And you know, it's their first ever major professional championship. So maybe it is Mark Stone holding up the Stanley Cup as the statue by itself. And I think that says enough. And then honoring on the bottom of the statue all the players and representatives of the Golden Knights that year, that might have been pretty that might be decent. Spence, I'll let you carry it. I know we want to talk about the NHL playoffs, and I'm kind of excited watching the game last night, because one thing I'll give Magnum credit for, the guy, I don't know of many of my friends or people that I work with that know hockey better than Chris Chapman. He really knows the sport really well. And again, at the beginning of the season, Chris didn't go on a limb when he said, I really like the Florida Panthers this year, and he's not getting the credit he deserves for talking about a team that he said is going to win the Stanley Cup from the jump. And they're right there again, making the run back after coming out of the 8-hole last year and going all the way to the finals, and then this year being on a mission. You've seen it with Bobrovsky. You've seen it with Tkachuk. These guys are not going to be denied this year. But I said at the beginning of the season, the one team I didn't want to play as the Golden Knights, my number one team, was the Edmonton Oilers. And it was because of the firepower of this team. And you have got to stay out of the box. We've talked about it all season against this team. And now in the postseason, it's even worse. You have three of the most prolific goal scorers currently in the National Hockey League. And when I say prolific, I mean this past season prolific. And I am talking about, obviously, Zach Hyman, Leon Draisaitl, and the greatest player in the game when he's right, Connor McDavid. And, you know, you throw in Skinner's been giving him some good minutes, man. Ever since he got benched, he's been playing good in the net. But again, when you put those guys and you had other guys, you know, on this team like Nugent Hopkins or Bouchard, this Edmonton Oilers team is a juggernaut offensively, and you cannot play them on special teams. And the penalty kill throughout the playoffs has even improved as well. This, to me, is the most dangerous team in hockey, and they're right where they should be, on the precipice of getting to the Stanley Cup final. And, of course, on the other side, Chris's Panthers are already through. And I think, that, no question, they're the favorite to win this thing overall. But, Chris, you can't overlook what the Edmonton Oilers are doing. It looks like they finally got it together in Edmonton.
Yeah, I was surprised the way that they basically went through the Dallas Stars. They caved them in. They really dominated that game on Friday. Was it Friday? Yeah, Friday. And I mean, you talked about you know, McDavid. He really hasn't. I mean, look, his points numbers are there, but he hasn't really been the guy to carry that team. I think Draisaitl's probably been their best player. But Brian, I mean, you talk about the postseason that Ryan Nugent Hopkins is having, Zach Hyman's having. You know, Evan Bouchard, they've got four guys with over 20 points. I mean, that's unheard of. And the difference to me in this series right now, first of all, the Stars look like they're out of gas. Looks like that tank is running on E. And, you know, I think that series with the Golden Knights, I think it's catching up to them. You know, they didn't have too much trouble with the Colorado Avalanche, but I think that's why it's so hard to win in this game. I mean, at some point, if you take a beating in that early round, it's going to catch up to you. You know, they've played five defensemen. They're still without Yanni Hakanpää, who is, while not a superstar, he certainly helps them on the blue line. And then they've had some injuries. You know, Chris Tanev got banged up. They were without Roope Hintz for a game or two in this series. But those are excuses. What's not an excuse is the way the Edmonton Oilers have found their game. And Stuart Skinner has been really, really good. Look, he gave up, I think, two goals on four shots on Wednesday night, and then he's given up one goal since. And they've really looked, their special teams is, you know, they put the special in special teams, let's put it that way, because everyone knows about their power play, But Brian, you mentioned their PK. It's been, I think, the best in the playoffs in the league. They're just really clicking on all cylinders right now. They've got the best player in the game. They may have the second best player in the game. I think they're going to close it out tonight. I don't think this series goes back to Dallas. I wouldn't have said that. I would not have said that a week ago, that the Edmonton Oilers were going to win this series in six. But I think Dallas is done. I think you can see it. They don't have an answer. And it's a shame because I really like Pete. I wanted to see him get to a cup final, but I just don't think it's going to happen, Brian. And you know, that Edmonton-Florida series, maybe not one that I think ESPN's got, you know, not two of the biggest markets, but you've got star power in Matthew Tkachuk and in Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. And if you're a network executive, you're drooling over the idea of Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl against Matthew Tkachuk in a Stanley Cup final.
I don't disagree with you, Chris. I think you got to add Bobrovsky to when you talk about stardom and star power. This guy, as he gets into his 30s, is just playing better and better and better. They thought he'd burn out last year, and he didn't even start the postseason last year as the number one goaltender for the Florida Panthers. And look what that guy has done. It's like when they lost, and really he let them down to a degree in the Stanley Cup Finals against the Vegas Golden Knights. He was not the same goaltender he'd been in the first three series. I don't know whether he got to Vegas, and that was the problem, but one thing is, since the beginning of the season, Bobrovsky arguably the best goaltender in the National Hockey League, and if in fact Florida does win it, as good as they are a very bothersome blue-collar type team, and exemplified by the play of Tkachuk, who's just ridiculous, but Bobrovsky has been so good, and to me, the only chance, switching over to the series right now in the Western Conference Final, the only chance Dallas has is Jake Oettinger, who is an exceptional goaltender.
He hasn't been good, Brian.
Hockey of his career.
He hasn't been good. He hasn't been good.
No, he hasn't been. He hasn't been. And that's their problem. Like I said, for them to win, he is going to be the Jake Oettinger we saw during the regular season that helped them get to the best record in the Western Conference, and that was because of his play, especially the second half of the season, and he just hasn't been that good, especially in this series. But we'll see. I think, as you mentioned, I think it's Florida and Florida and Edmonton on a collision course, and I think even though, as you said, the executives at ESPN might not be too happy, hockey fans that actually watch and appreciate the game, how can you not be happy with, as you said, the star power, a team like Florida that's going to beat you up, that's going to grind you down, and a team like Edmonton that you cannot sleep on for 1 second, or they'll score three goals before you can breathe.
Yeah, and to me, the series is kind of defined by Pete DeBoer. I mean, this has kind of defined his career, where you just get so far, and then he kind of just falls short. I think that's why his time in the Golden Knights kind of, like, he'll get you there. You know, it just feels like he can't get you over the hump. I mean, I'm sure it probably, you know, keeps him up at night.
Gerard Gallant's a similar coach, Spencer. I mean, another guy that we didn't talk about when you talk about the inaugural Golden Knights team, Gerard Gallant, the perfect guy to start a new franchise, and we saw that in him. Another guy that needs to go down in Vegas Golden Knights lore. But go ahead, Spence. I know we always go over on the Knights, but how can you not in the NHL playoffs? So take it over, man.
Yeah, let's jump over to
Facts This. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact This.
Fact This is brought to you by Lifelike Hair Center of Las Vegas. If you are experiencing hair loss or thinning hair and want to learn about the best non-surgical options available, call 702-737-5759 or go to lifelikehair.com and schedule your free consultation today. It's a fact. Caitlin Clark joins Sabrina Ionescu as the only player in WNBA history to record 150-plus points, 50-plus rebounds, and 50-plus assists through their first 10 career games, which I'm sure is a stat that Brian loves. I'm not the biggest fan of stats like that, but I know Brian would like that one. And this is something that should be celebrated, but it doesn't seem like her fellow WNBA players share the same sentiment. And what I mean by that is she has taken some pretty nasty hits. It seems like a near game appearance where she's getting checked. She's getting, like, swept underneath when she takes a jump shot. I mean, it's easily seen that they like there's a target on her back, and people are talking about the Indiana Fever need to get an enforcer, not even a basketball player, an enforcer. Like, this is hockey or something. I have a few opinions on this for sure. I have a hot take on this, but I'm going to ask you guys first. What's your take on, like, Caitlin Clark's experience in the WNBA? I mean, it's been insanity because the offseason is so short for her. I mean, I feel like we were just watching her in college, and, like, 2 months later, she's suiting up and playing in a WNBA season. I mean, she has just had an unbelievable journey to this point.
Yeah, you know, Spencer, Caitlin Clark, it's not a surprise to me that she is taking the beating she's taking coming into the league. Look at all of the hoopla. There is, I don't know, men or women. I mean, she has been just the most talked about athlete, man or woman, this last year more than anyone I can think about. She's come to the forefront. So there's a lot of pressure. She gets a $28 million endorsement deal with Nike right off the jump before she's even suited up for a WNBA game. This is going to internally piss other women and people in general off. It's just the way that it is. Has she earned all of this? Well, for the reason I say yes is look what she's done for women's college basketball in the last couple of years at Iowa. She has done things that are unprecedented, Spencer. And this is the reason for the hype. Her ability to score, her perimeter game is unbelievable. She will morph into the WNBA and become one of its finest players. I do believe that. She just has to get acclimated, get her feet underneath her, and get the respect of the rest of the WNBA players, which I think she will do and she will earn. She has that kind of a work ethic. I think the WNBA players need to appreciate her because is doing is getting them worldwide recognition that they haven't had before she entered this league. They've had some amazing players come through the WNBA, some of the best women players in college basketball history, and yet Caitlin Clark exceeds all of them as far as the hype goes. No one ever got a $28 million endorsement deal right out of college like she has. It is giving them the recognition that they want, which that recognition should equate to a larger fan base, which should equate to merchandise sales, which should equate to larger contract for these women, which is what they are all whining about. And I do say whining because they do not compare apples to apples. You know my feeling on this subject. They play less than half of the games of the NBA players. They have less than half of the teams in their league than the NBA players. And yet the rings that Mark Davis got for those women the last 2 years were as nice as any Super Bowl I've ever seen. And again, is that warranted? Hey, that's a matter of opinion and speculation. I'll leave that subject alone. What I will say is every one of those players ought to kiss Caitlin Clark's ass every time they cast a paycheck, because those paychecks are going to get inflated down the road because of her. That is my opinion. I thought when the WNBA lost Kobe Bryant, it was not talked about enough how the WNBA could even fold down the road. That's how big and how much he meant. When you have a name of that magnitude embracing a league, it is going to get traction. He commands traction, and he's gone. And yet someone like Caitlin Clark has been an energy bolt to the WNBA, something we all should see. We talk about her. We might make jokes about her. We might even put it down because we don't feel that it's worthy of the attention that it gets. But yet she has done this, and I think she deserves all the credit in the world, Spencer, and I think she will overcome the brutal physical attack she's getting when she plays every game. But that's what comes with success. There's always going to be envy, and that's all it is, Spencer. It's a little bit of envy, a little bit of jealousy, and a little bit of the girl saying, hey, you're not as good as us yet. And that's all it is.
You know, this is a situation where multiple things can be true at the same time. Look, I don't think that foul that we're talking about, that's been highlighted so much, you know, what we're not talking about is Caitlin Clark trash talking the girl on the other end of the court right before it happened, right? Like the race baiting hucksters like Clay Travis are out there telling you that it's racism, and you know they don't like her because she's white and straight and attractive, and yet what they don't tell you is just like in the LSU game when Angel Reese showed her to point at the ring. They're not telling you that Caitlin Clark was trash-talking Angel Reese before LSU kicked Iowa's ass. They're not telling you that. But the problem is, there is, I think, a sense of, this is our league. you're not going to come in as this kid from Iowa and become the star player. You have to earn it. And while I think that some of it is a bit much. Like some of the fouls that she's taking, it's rough. But like we don't talk about, and it's almost like these guys who are trying to stir up the racism pot, what they're not telling you, and maybe they don't remember or they're too stupid to tell you, Michael Jordan used to get his ass kicked every single time he played the Detroit Pistons. Larry Bird and Kevin McHale would get their ass kicked every time they'd play the Detroit Pistons. The Pistons had a reputation for beating the crap out of star players. And you know what? That's just the way it was in the NBA in the 1980s. But guess who got the last laugh? Larry Bird, Michael Jordan. Caitlin Clark, for all the lumps she's taking now, she's going to get the last laugh.
I agree.
If the Indiana Fever don't screw this up, and I mean not this year, I mean down the road, they have two phenomenal players in Aaliyah Boston and Caitlin Clark. Yeah. If they add a third piece, and they will be in a position to do so because they're so bad, they're going to win NBA or WNBA titles. Like Caitlin Clark is going to win probably 3 or 4 WNBA titles. You could bookmark that. She's going to be the face of the league. She's going to be the best player in the league. You look at her numbers, and outside of the turnovers, I think she's top 15 in points and top 15 in assists. And I don't think there's any player on any team that can say that. She's also, I think she leads the league in turnovers. So obviously that's something.
Yeah.
But Brian, she's still learning. She's going to be fine. She's a incredible player. She is a generational talent. And like I said, as long as the Fever don't screw this up, they're going to win titles. Like
yep.
They're going to win multiple titles because Aaliyah Boston is going to be a star. And they've already got the girl who's going to be the best player in the league in 2 or 3 years in Caitlin Clark. In fact, she might be the best player in the league next year because we saw the way Jackie Young struggled when she came in the league. I think Jackie was the number one overall pick, was she not? And she struggled when she came into the league. And all of a sudden, you know what? She goes to the Olympics. She plays that 3-on-3, wins a gold medal with Kelsey Plum. And all of a sudden, the Aces are now 2-time WNBA champs because it clicked. All of a sudden, the confidence was there. It clicked. Caitlin Clark has the confidence. She just needs to find her game. And once she does, she's going to be unstoppable. I mean, she's that good. She is going to be. Listen, I like watching her play because she's a good player. I could care less who she shares her bed with. I could care less what color she is. I could care less if people, these weirdos, think she's attractive or not. I don't watch the WNBA because I think women are attractive. I watch the WNBA because I like the game. I like watching them play. Caitlin Clark is fun to watch.
No, Chris, All that said, she is a generational player, like you said. She will be fine. All she's doing is she's getting her introduction today, and that's what happens. You support, and you brought up Jackie Young. There is no question. Jackie Young has become quietly one of the best guards in the W. No, she drafted number one out of Notre Dame. A lot of people thought that was a mistake. But, boy, is she coming to her. And I really think that 3-on-3 stint with Kelsey Plum in the Olympics helped her out a great deal. And then, again, Kelsey Plum is another one who's coming to her own. It seemed like Bill Laimbeer put a distributor cap on Kelsey Plum, and her scoring, what she had done at Washington, wasn't there when she first joined the Aces. But we've seen what has happened since the changing of the guard at the coaching position. No question about it. Hammonds is so much better at coaching her and understanding her abilities. But all that being said, talking about generational players, we're seeing some more of them over in the NBA. And I know, Spence, you wanted to get to that as well. I mean, Luka Doncic just continues to amaze me with his ability to play the game of basketball. One of the greatest I've ever seen. I'm tying players like Larry Bird and several others into this guy's game. There is just not much he can't do on a basketball court.
No, yeah, and this is going to be a very exciting matchup. And obviously the biggest storyline going into the NBA Finals is Kyrie Irving playing against his former team. And not only that, there's a lot of bad blood. It's not like they're playing the Cavaliers where he might get cheered on his way out. I mean, there are going to be some racist remarks thrown at him, guaranteed, when he goes to Boston, besides the fact that they probably have the most racist fan base in, like, all of American sports. And you know he's going to get it. But, you know, he had the whole incident where he was, you know, flicking them off on the sideline behind his head. And then, of course, he went to the center court and stomped on the logo, which is, like, a big no-go for everyone. And obviously, Luka Doncic is in his first finals appearance. You know, Boston's trying to reclaim themselves after losing to the Warriors in the finals. It's a pretty, I mean, I'm sure for the NBA, this is about all they want. You have probably the biggest franchise, if not the Lakers, you know, in the NBA finals again. And then you have a big market team like Dallas, you know, led by like a super mega billionaire in Mark Cuban. So it should be good. I mean, I don't really know who I'm leaning towards. I kind of lean towards Boston, I guess, if I had to like choose, just because I feel like Luka and Kyrie like aren't the best defenders, and they haven't really been challenged so much, like too far. You know, like Anthony Edwards and stuff, they kind of disappeared in that series. I don't think you're going to necessarily get that. I think you'll get games where Jason Tatum kind of is chucking it up. He takes too many shots. He shoots like, you know, 8 for 22, something like that. He just tends to have those. But over the course of a long series with Drew Holiday, I didn't mention that too. I think one of the biggest storylines is if the Boston Celtics win, let's say Drew Holiday wins finals MVP, because they tend to go to defenders a lot for that kind of award if no one really goes crazy. If Drew Holiday wins finals MVP, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, no doubt about it. I think he's on the edge right now. I think if he wins it, even if they win the finals period and he plays well, I think he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. So a lot of big, you know, stories going into the finals. I don't know what you guys think about what's going to happen in the series.
I hear what you're saying about Drew Holiday. His on-ball and off-ball defending is as good as anyone in the game right now, and he has been an unbelievable addition to the Boston Celtics. There's just no doubt about it that part of the reason they are so good is because of the subclass. You look at Jaylen Brown Jason Tatum. But it's a supporting cast of the Boston Celtics that really is not talked about nearly enough. The same would go for the Dallas Mavericks. Number one, Spencer, is what I will say about the Dallas Mavericks is, you know, I never thought that Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic would be able to coexist like they are. I didn't think there was enough that one basketball wouldn't be enough for the two of them on the team. They have really learned how to go together. And the biggest thing that people don't talk about, it is the maturity of Kyrie Irving. He is finally matured. You don't have to think about all the statements and the racial comments he's made before. The bottom line is, this guy has matured as a basketball player and understands to win another NBA final, he has to be able to give it up to a guy like Doncic, like he semi did to LeBron James when he won one in Cleveland. Doncic and him are playing well together, but it is guys like Derek Jones Jr. out of UNLV and that are helping this team that come off the bench and play really, really well. Role players usually are the unsung heroes when you win championships. And man, both these teams are loaded with guys that could be the forward.
Magnum, your thoughts on the NBA Finals?
You know, I was hoping the T-Wolves were going to get there. You know, it's funny because I like Mark Cuban. I think he's a great owner. I think what he's done for the Dallas Mavericks is awesome. I'm a certified Boston hater, but I like Jason Tatum, so it's tough. you mentioned the maturation of Kyrie Irving, and I think, you know, he's an unlikable guy. Like, I think there's a lot that you can look at and point at him and say, you know what, he's not a good human being. What he is, though, is he's a good basketball player, and when he's focused on playing basketball and not anti-Semitism and not the world being flat and not whatever other nonsense he's spewing, the guy's a damn good basketball player, one of the best in the league. And what's not being talked about enough is the defense of the Dallas Mavericks and the way that they really shut down the T-Wolves. Like, I mean, Anthony Edwards was shooting over 50% going into that series, and they shut him down. Like, he did nothing. Like, I mean, the T-Wolves, I know they won their one game and they didn't get swept. Hey, congratulations, Minnesota, you didn't get swept. But the Dallas Mavericks are good. I know Porzingis is supposedly close to returning for the Celtics, so that should make things a little bit interesting. But I think it's going to be a close series. I think Boston's just a little too good. They've been here before. Jaylen Brown is a phenomenal player. I like some of the guys that they've got coming off the bench. Pritchard is a guy that I like. So I think the Celtics are going to win it. I think they're finally going to raise that banner with this crew cast of characters and this core that they've been building. And, you know, a nod to Brad Stevens, who you know, I think a lot of people kind of forget is still there behind the scenes pulling a lot of the strings. And, you know, don't forget, they fired a coach last season, right, because of some stuff that was going on. So, you know, they're a good team. They're a well-run organization, and I think that they've got some depth, and I think that they're going to outlast Dallas. I think they're the better team. I think Dallas has the best player in the series and Luka Doncic, but Jason Tatum is not some scrub. So, you know, I just think, you know, when I think about the Celtics, I just think about, like I said, some of the depth guys that they have. And I always forget that they've got Al Horford on the team.
Yeah.
Like, I watched Al Horford.
Just play an ageless wonder, Chris.
Like, I watched him play with Joakim Noah and the Florida Gators in a Elite Eight game. In person in 2008, I think it was. So they're a really good team. Oh, it was 2007. 2007. The guy's still playing in the NBA.
Yeah.
So
and not just playing at the absolute highest level.
Yeah. Yeah. He's on a team that's in the NBA Finals. It's incredible.
Yep.
So just really quickly, what do you guys think? Prediction series. I'm going to go Celtics in six.
Go ahead, Mags.
That sounds about right. I think Boston in six sounds about right. I think Dallas will be competitive. I just think that at the end of the day, Boston's too good.
Yeah, Boston's the best team. I'm going to actually say the Celtics in seven. I think Dallas is going to hold their home court in the series. Matter of fact, I think it's going to be an all-home team. The home team's going to win every game. I see the Celtics winning in seven. I think we're going to see an epic NBA Finals. Look forward to it. Might not be the teams you wanted to see there, but I think in the long run, they're the teams that played the best throughout the postseason. I would have liked to see Minnesota find a way through, but I think their glory's waiting for them in the future. But Celtics in seven, but I think we're going to see a hell of a series.
No, I think it's going to be great. I think it's going to be a very competitive series. All right, I think that's going to do it for today's show. I want to thank Brian for joining from Costa Rica. I don't know what time it is over there, but I always
real quick. I'm just going to do a little pan around.
Producer, on Special of the Wiz. We'll see you guys next week on Sunday. See you guys next time.